I'm Ethan. He's Ben. Usually the Lords of Limited, but today the Lords Unlimited in this exciting bonus spinoff podcast.
Not only do we have an exciting new show, we finally have the right person from the show doing the introduction to the podcast.
Lies and slander. And what a big whiff for me to not come up with a great nickname for you. That's something that I have to work on for next week. But for now, the question on everyone's mind, what are Ethan and Ben doing in my podcast app in the middle of the week?
Well, we're launching this new bonus show, Lords Unlimited, as an exclusive perk for our Patreon podcast feed. In addition to our regular RSS feed, which is what we use to send the show out to stuff like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, other platforms, we have an RSS feed through Patreon that allows us to directly release our audio content to subscribers there.
Currently, that feed gets an early access version of our weekly episode, but it will now feature a bonus mini episode in the middle of the week as well.
Yeah, this gives us an opportunity to continue the conversation from the main episode of the week. Stuff like looking at draft logs, Carter archetype deep dives, sealed discussions, cube, that sort of thing.
Basically, more of the same high-quality, limited content for our most dedicated and invested listeners. And that's really the goal of this show and our Patreon, is to invest in our most invested audience members.
Yeah, after talking about it, podcasting is what we do best, and creating a show specifically for our biggest fans is something we're really excited about. We're going to be releasing the first couple of these episodes publicly, which is why you're listening to this now, and then we're going to be taking it exclusively over to Patreon after that.
So, if you like what you hear, if you want more of the same content you enjoy every week, you can think of us like any kind of streaming service and head on over to patreon.com/lordsoflimited to make sure you don't miss a second of content.
I love it.
So we'll just be picking up where we left off with the conversation of the Worlds drafts. When we left, we had Simon Nielsen's excellent Black-Red draft, where he 3-0'd. Day two, the only 7-0 player, the reigning world champ himself, John Emmanuel Duprat, sits down, deciding to crush again. As I mentioned, his day one draft was just a thing of beauty. Had like this Mardu soup deck. He had your card, Curse Recording. Oh my gosh, that we left that out.
I didn't need to wax poetic about it. We had spoilers. What was your rare?
Exactly. See, mine is interesting. I did Funeral Room Awakening Hall. This is the spicy rare that you would take over your top uncommon. I put Funeral Room Awakening Hall. That's the black, the 8-drop. You return all your creatures from your graveyard to the battlefield.
I like that take. I would take several of my top uncommons over that. Would you take Cursed Recording over all your top uncommons?
I've never played with Cursed Recording, so I think no.
What?
I've never gotten to pack one, pick one it.
Oh, well, yeah, that's because you got to pack two, pick five, and jump ship for it, baby.
Is that the tweet you just put out? Was like a deck that was built around Cursed Recording that never got one?
Yeah, I just draft like I'm going to get Cursed Recording, and it's been doing very well for me.
Oh, what a life. What a life to live. Hardcast Valgavoth in this deck, John Emmanuel Duprat did, and had a Cursed Recording, worked out very well, and he 3-0'd, 7-0'd day one, sits down for a draft at day two. What does he see going on in this pack?
Pack one, pick one. I mean, it's basically quickly between the two rares, but we'll list the other cards here. There's a Fear of Lost Teeth as the best common in the pack. That's the single black 1/1 that when it dies, you can ping. There's Inquisitive Glimmer. That's the white, blue, 2/3 uncommon that makes your enchantments and rooms cost less to cast. There's Defiant Survivor. That's the 1 and a green 3/2 that if it survives combat or is tapped at the beginning of your second main phase, you get to manifest Dread. And then your two rares, not one, but two. There's Silent Hall Creeper, the 1 and a blue enchantment creature, the 1/1 that can't be blocked. And whenever it connects, you can draw a card, put 2+1/+1 counters on it, or make it a copy of another creature you control. The other rare you've got at your disposal is Twitching Doll. 1 and a green for a 2/2 taps to add a mana of any color. And if you do, you put a nest counter on it. Then you can also sack it to make 2/2s equal to the number of nest counters on it. 2/2 spiders with reach.
Yeah, only at sorcery speed can you do that sacrificing. Yeah, it does come down to these two rares. They're pretty close, I would say, right? Like, you're just sort of deciding which color you'd rather draft with this pick.
That's what this says to me. Yeah, these are comparably power level rares. This comes down to, do I want to start blue or do I want to start green? For me, I want to start green. I would take Twitching Doll over Silent Hall Creeper here because I think it leaves me more flexible for a similarly powered card. And this is, I do think Silent Hall Creeper has a higher ceiling though than Twitching Doll does. Twitching Doll is the more conservative pick. I think Silent Hall Creeper is the more aggressive pick.
Yeah, I would take Hall Creeper. I would just rather draft blue than green personally. Like, I'm a little bit more, you know, you had like Teemer as your whatever top three colors. I think I'm a little bit more Grixis-y, as evidenced by my Scorching Dragonfire, Final Vengeance, Unable to Scream, common rankings. And Twitching Doll, I think, is like fine. I also think Hall Creeper, yeah, as you said, it's a better card, but maybe that's just reflective of what I think its ceiling is. But it's close. You're saying something with this pick, but I don't think it's saying necessarily like one is right or wrong or one is more powerful or not. Just what do you want to do?
Yeah.
And JED wants to be blue. He takes the Hall Creeper.
For sure. Moving on to pack one, pick two, with a Silent Hall Creeper in your pile, you see the following cards as options. There's a Spineseeker Centipede, the 2 and a green 2/1 that can search up a basic. There's also a Vanish from Sight, 3 and a blue instant, where you can put a target creature or enchantment on top or bottom of its owner's library. You scry one, or surveil one, rather, excuse me. And then moving on to the uncommons, there's a Shroud Stomper, Reanimators, Rejoice, the 3 white-white-black-black 5/5 that when it ETBs, you draw a card and drain and gain, also on attacks. There's Threats Around Every Corner, the 3 and a green enchantment that whenever you manifest, you get to search up a basic. And then there's Piggy Bank, the 3/2 that dies into a treasure. Orphans of the Wheat, the 1 and a white 2/1 that whenever it attacks, you can tap any number of creatures and it gets +1/+1 equal to the number of creatures you tapped.
I wouldn't have even put this on the list, but it was a card that JED pulled to the front, and we will see it appear in a later pack as well. This, I think, is a pretty clear Threats Around Every Corner. The card with the highest ceiling, like, as much as I'm like a little gun shy of drafting green, this card's just really powerful. You feel a little bad having just passed Twitching Doll, right? You're like thrilled to go Twitching Doll into Threats Around Every Corner, but I don't think it's enough where you don't take it here.
Yeah, I agree. You got to take Threats Around Every Corner as the best card. To me, the pulling Orphans of the Wheat to the front said, I want to try to be blue-white. That's what that said to me.
Interesting. But that's such a, it's not even that good in blue-white. It's just not a good card.
You could say the same thing about Simon Nielsen, Unable to Scream compared to Reluctant Role Model.
Uh-huh.
Like, you could say you're taking a huge hit in power level there. It's not even that good of a card compared to Reluctant Role Model. But yet we're lauding that one because that's what we think. You know what I mean? Whereas this one, he's steering into something that you and I personally wouldn't steer towards. But I think I think it's a similar thought process, just contrary to how we would want to draft with preferences.
Yeah, makes sense.
But yeah, I think you slam Threats Around Every Corner here, which JED does. Maybe not slamming it, but that's what he ends up picking. So you got Silent Hall Creeper and Threats Around Every Corner. Moving on to pack one, pick three, all commons in consideration here. There's a Glimmerlight, the 2-mana artifact that's the equipment that gives +1/+1 and makes a glimmer. There's Slavering Branch Snapper, the 7/6 trample land cycler. And Tunnel Surveyor, 2 and a blue for the 2/2, make a 1/1 glimmer when it ETBs.
Yeah, I mean, this is a stark drop in power level from the last pack. You're already just picking among some middling commons, but there is a common that was on your list of top five in Glimmerlight. And I do think that's the pick here. I might have been tempted by the Tunnel Surveyor because he already has a blue card, but I think taking the colorless 2-drop here is a nice spot to be in.
Glimmerlight's just a better card than Tunnel Surveyor.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I have felt bad about playing it on turn two, which has me thinking about it not being really a 2-drop, if that makes sense.
That's fine, but it's still a better 3-drop than Tunnel Surveyor also.
Yes, I think that's true. Like
it being a 3-drop 2/2 that dies and leaves around an Ancestral Blade is better than Tunnel Surveyor.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, just a better card. I feel pretty strongly about that. JED agrees and takes Glimmerlight here out of the pack. Moving on to pack one, pick four. This was a doozy of a pick. So cards in consideration here. There's Slavering Branch Snapper, the 7/6 Trample Forest Cycler. Final Vengeance, the single black, exile a creature and sack a creature and enchantment when you cast it. Uncommons, there's Orphans of the Wheat pulled to the front yet again, as well as a Disturbing Mirth in the pack. Black red for the enchantment. And whenever it ETBs, you can sacrifice a creature and enchantment to draw two cards. And then if you sacrifice Disturbing Mirth, you get to manifest red.
This seems like, to me at the time, and even looking at this now, like a pretty clear Final Vengeance. This is splashable with Threats Around Every Corner. You can sacrifice Threats Around Every Corner to it. You can go into green, black, whatever. Like, I like Disturbing Mirth. It's the card with the highest ceiling in the pack, but I've already got really good cards with Hall Creeper and Threats. I don't need to, like, there's no world where those all make my deck, and I don't need to do that, I think. So I would just take Final Vengeance here myself.
Interesting. I would take, even with JED's route, I would take Disturbing Mirth here. I think seeing that card pack one, pick four is a much bigger signal than Final Vengeance is. And I think Disturbing Mirth is more important to red-black working than Final Vengeance is.
But I'm not taking Final Vengeance and going red-black. That's what I'm saying.
That's fair. Yeah, I hear that. I still think, personally, I would take Disturbing Mirth here.
But you're going to take Disturbing Mirth here. Aren't you going to be giving more weight to Hall Creeper and threats as the draft progresses? I just feel like you're taking Mirth and then putting yourself in this spot where you're drafting like two decks, but you're not going to be giving Mirth that much weight.
We're four picks in here. I'm thinking I've got to abandon ship on blue at this point. We're four picks in and I've not seen a single blue card I'm interested in.
Isn't threats higher on your list than Mirth?
I am interested in threats. Mirth is higher on my list than threats is, but I also think threats and Mirth go great together in some sort of a Jund, Manifest Dread, Sacrifice, Soup, whatever.
I'm less interested about abandoning Hall Creeper than you are. Like, we saw Vanish from Sight. We saw Tunnel Surveyor. They're commons. They're not great, but they're cards.
Yeah, they're cards. But back to my original point of, and at hindsight's 2020, obviously, but like the Silent Hall Creeper versus Twitching Doll debate.
Mm-hmm.
Twitching Doll goes much better through this draft, but Twitching Doll also goes much better through drafts. Like, if your draft isn't messy, Twitching Doll is going to be great. If your draft is messy, Twitching Doll is going to be way better than Silent Hall Creeper.
Mm.
Like, it's just very hard, unless green is completely cut, to get pushed off of Twitching Doll. And then if you go Twitching Doll, threats, Glimmerlight, Disturbing Mirth, yeah, like, you're thrilled. And I, like, again, hindsight 2020, but that's I think the argument between Twitching Doll and Silent Hall Creeper and why I like starting green more than I like starting blue.
You're selling me. I still think you're underrating Final Vengeance in this spot.
As an individual card.
Yes. That's where I think the rub is here. But you're selling me. Certainly if you had Doll into threats, I like taking Mirth here and thinking about Jund. Given Hall Creeper into threats, I think Final Vengeance is the pick.
Yeah, that's fair. But I think both of us are on the same page that it is not Orphans of the Wheat.
This was the most surprising. I said that Simon's pack one, pick one was the most surprising pick for me of the two drafts. This, I think, is the most surprising pick. Taking Orphans of the Wheat pick four here over Mirth and Vengeance is wild to me.
But again, what does that say? I'm curious whether that is preference for trying to get into blue-white, mm-hmm, or if JED is higher on Orphans of the Wheat as a card than we are.
Yeah. Again, I feel less confident that he would respond to us, but I would be curious about this pick.
I think he would respond to us. Well, yeah. Let's tweet at him. We'll see.
Okay.
All right, moving on to pack one, pick five. Did take Orphans of the Wheat there. So you've now got Silent Hall Creeper, Threats, Glimmerlight, and Orphans of the Wheat. Moving on to pack one, pick five. See the following cards as options. There's an Underwater Tunnel / Slimy Aquarium. That's the Surveil 2 and then Manifest Dread into a Hill Giant. And Fear of Imposters is the 1BBB 3/2 counter something. It's controller Manifest Dread.
I would have been tempted by Fear of Imposters here. Personally, like, I do think that card is better than Underwater Tunnel, Slimy Aquarium. JED took the room, and I wonder, again, like, maybe you just think it's a better card. Maybe he likes the Surveil aspect of it, just a little bit of hand smoothing. Maybe he's also giving weight to Slimy Aquarium being Manifest Red synergy with threats around every corner. Maybe all of the above. I don't know. But I think I would have taken Fear of Imposters here.
I think I also would have taken Fear of Imposters here. It's close.
Yeah,
I don't think you could say one's right or wrong, but you're getting deeper into blue with either pick, so I don't think it has huge ripples for the draft either. Mm-hmm. Moving on to pack one, pick six. See the following cards as options. There's a Slavering Branch Snapper, the 7/6 Land Cycler. There's Erratic Apparition, the 2BBB 1/3 Flying Vigilance that whenever enchantment ETBs, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn. There's an Altanak. Altanak coming down early in the coverage. I saw on Twitter that an Altanak got flipped from three states' names?
Yeah, I don't think it was on coverage, but it did happen day one, draft one. I believe it was Nicole Tipple got to triple say its name out, Altanak.
Love to see it. That's the 9/9 for 7 mana. And then Baseball Bat as well, 1 and a green for the equipment that gives +1/+1. And whenever the creature attacks, you can tap down a defending blocker.
I think I would have been tempted to take Altanak here, but I respect the Branch Snapper pick.
Yeah, they're similar cards.
They're similar, which is kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
They're similar.
Yes. Branch Snapper is probably more flexible than Altanak, ultimately. I hadn't really thought about that before, ever, right until this moment.
You're like, I think I also would trample versus a 7/6 trample, 1/7 mana, 1/6 mana. Like, they're pretty close.
Pretty close. Yeah.
The end of pack one almost, and we haven't seen a single say its name. So like that does diminish. That is part of the piece of it. There's also the part of Altanac actually now I'm thinking about it. Underwater tunnel on turn one, surveil a land into the bin. Altanac on two, build your own rampant growth. I'm back on Altanac, maybe.
Back on Altanac. The other thing about Altanac is, I mean, not in this draft, but there's reanimator upside for Altanac that there is not for Slavering Branch Snapper if you're in the...
Correct.
Abzan reanimator life.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'm back on Altanac.
I think I would be back on Altanac also. That would be my inclination. But certainly, again, much like the Fear of Imposters underwater tunnel pick, I don't really care.
Yeah.
More than anything, I am worried desperately about the power level of this draft at this point.
Well, but I'm glad you brought that up because that is something that I take umbrage with coverage of Limited a lot of the time is like, I feel like the drafts are talked about in the context of like the ceiling of draft decks in the format period.
In best versus, of one, yeah.
Versus how has JED navigated the seat he's in? Has he passed power? Has he missed out on a lane? And neither of those things are true. And so if his pick six stinks, that means probably everybody's pick six stinks. And that's fine because he's playing in pod. So like that, yeah, he's not seeing power, but that's sort of the name of the game here. It's day two. It's pod number one, day two of Worlds. What are you expecting to get pick six?
Yeah, that's fair. The other thing that was really interesting to me on coverage, speaking of coverage and pod drafting, and maybe this was just a fluke, but I'd never really thought about this before. Frequently when they were flashing up everyone's records at the table, like at the ends of the rounds, you would see like a 3-0 and 2-1s clustered together.
Mm.
And then on the other side of the table, the 0-3 and some 1-2s clustered together. And I wonder how often that's the case where like there's 3 to 4 people that cooperate well and all of them have a chance to 3-0 the pod. And then there's a side of the table that fights and like ends up just crushing each other. And they're the 1-2s and the 0-3. It seemed like that was a trend, but I've not done nearly enough pod drafting nor high level pod drafting to see if that's the case. But it did. That got me thinking about that then when they were flashing those up on coverage.
Well, and you know, the weird thing that happens in these tournaments, specifically on day two, is that you're not paired against your record in the draft. So like JED 7-0 and loses round one and then plays against someone who's 7-1, but won their first draft round, right? So you're paired against paired against people with the same record as you overall in the tournament, rather than making sure the 1-0s in the pod play each other.
So you're playing, but no, you're still playing in pod.
You're still playing in pod
on day two.
They're not playing out of pod, but you're not. But like I said, it's not bracketed like that. It's not
right.
Okay, all the 1-0s play each other,
right,
and then
the two.
Like that's not how it works, which is weird. Yeah. That like you're not necessarily like if you're 2-0 in the draft, you're not necessarily going to play against the other 2-0 person in round three
on day two. Yeah, but round one it works out.
Yeah, day one, it'll be the same. But that's another sort of wrinkle. That's interesting to look for the people cooperating or not on sides of the table.
Yeah. Anyway, back to JED's draft here. Took the Slavering Branch Snapper over Altanac. But I do think there have been some slight missteps or certainly knobs you could tweak. Once you take Silent Hall Creeper, whatever, that packs in hindsight. I would like to just lobby for Twitching Doll one more time.
Yeah.
You always take threats around every corner, pick two. Pick three, always take Glimmerlight. Pick four, I think, potentially some different decisions.
Or never take Orphans of the Weed.
we want JED to respond to our tweet here. Let's ease up a little bit.
I've played in a pro tour. I'm sure we're comparable skill levels, he and I. Like he can take it.
Okay, pick five. Doesn't matter. Pick six doesn't matter. You haven't had a lot of agency other than pick one and pick four.
Correct.
In the draft.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Moving. And this is what they say about bad seats. Like this is a tough seat in a draft. Moving on to pack one, pick seven. There's the blue red land, Peculiar Lighthouse. There's another Tunnel Surveyor, the 2/2 that makes a 1/1 glimmer, as well as Keys to the House, the 1-man artifact that can search up a basic land or lock or unlock a door of a room.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little piece of colorless fixing. He has a room. Have you ever locked a room with keys to the house? You probably have never put keys to the house in a deck, have you?
Bingo, bango, bongo. That's the one. Never put keys to the house in a deck. You know, do you know what other card I've never put in a deck? I'm a little scared to admit this, being a podcast host. Midnight Mayhem. I've never cast that card.
Okay, that's... Luckily for you, I've drafted enough Boros for both of us for the entirety of the format, but that's crazy to me.
I've played a lot of Arabellas. I've played a lot of red-white. Never had Midnight Mayhem.
Yeah, it's fine. Critics raved, it's fine. I think Keys to the House is fine here. I think Tunnel Surveyor would also be fine here.
Yeah, again, either way, it's not going to have a huge impact on the course of your draft. Pick 8, you got another choice of Altenac versus an Underwater Tunnel. JED lands on Underwater Tunnel. Pick 9, he grabs a Dagger Maw Megalodon over Fear of Lost Teeth. Pick 10, a Ticket Booth, which is the red enchantment that manifests dread and then can give your thing double strike on the other half over a Shroud Stomper. Pick 11, a Frantic Strength, the +2/+2 enchantment. Bedhead Beastie, the 5/6 land cycler for mountains. And pick 13, a Leyline of Hope.
Yeah, definitely not a great wheel. Like, we saw Simon get some little goodies, some little nuggets, turn inside out for his red deck, pick 11 or whatever. Nothing here. The wheel is making me more nervous than the like bulk of pack one is. But as you said, he's not seen a lot, not had a lot of agency, and certainly not seen a lot of power. The most powerful card, Hall Creeper, I guess, threats around every corner for sure.
And then also Disturbing Mirth, pick 4. That was the next best card that you've seen that you didn't pick.
Correct.
But it wasn't like, I mean, this is low power level, but again, like you said, it wasn't like he was shipping powerful cards.
No, it's just a low power thing. And I think picking up on rooms is nice when things are low power, like getting some value, getting some 2-for-1s, like the Underwater Tunnel, smoothing your draws, whatever, having synergy with threats. I think that all checks out to me. Like, and he's open to, with the surveilling and with threats and Keys to the House, open to splash as well. But probably going to be blue-green at this point.
Yes, almost certainly.
Yeah.
What are your priorities going into pack 2 here, if you're JED?
Power and removal. Like, he doesn't have
power,
any inner...
You need everything. You need power, you need removal, and you need a curve. Like, yeah, I'm really worried about his curve also.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he needs everything, but it's only pack 2. Like, he can get those things, but you're right. He needs kind of everything.
All right, pack two, pick 1. See the following cards as options. At common, there's a Meat Locker. That's the thing that can stun something or draw 3 and discard a card. There's also a Say Its Name, 1 and a green for the look at the top 3 cards of your library, put them in your graveyard. Then you can return a creature or a land card from your graveyard to your hand. In the uncommons, there's a Cursed Windbreaker, the Manifest Dread, Flying Equipment, and Patchwork Beastie, the 3/3 that can't attack or block unless you have Delirium.
It's interesting. Like, I like Patchwork Beastie, and when Simon took it, Paul and Marshall were like really excited about it. It made your top 10, right? It was your number 10.
It was my number 10. Yeah.
I think that all leads me to believe, like, I think I'm just a little too low on the card. Like, I like it. I don't love it by any stretch, and maybe I need to love it a little bit. I agree with JED that it's the pick here over the Say Its Name, the Meat Locker, and the Windbreaker.
Yeah, and that is what JD selected. But that goes back to, you hated green for a good 2 weeks in the format, right? And still would prefer to not be green. So it makes sense that you haven't played with it that much or aren't as high on it.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear you describe your format as Grixis-y. So have you been drafting a lot of blue, black, or blue, red?
No, but those are just the three. I just more mean those are the three colors I would be happier to start in. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But that once you start blue, you're fine to pair it with white or
correct.
Yeah. You're fine to pair it with green. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just curious. All right. So Snags the Patchwork Beastie. Pack 2, pick 2. Lots of good options here. Unfortunately, all in the same pack.
Yeah.
Where is the stuff in pack 1? There's a Ghost Vacuum, the rare that can suck things up out of the graveyard, and then you can pay 6, tap it to make 1/1 copies of any creatures that were exiled. There's Growing Dread, the blue-green enchantment that has flash. ETBs, you manifest dread, and when you turn something face up, it gets a +1/+1 counter. Paranormal Analyst as well, 1 and a blue for the 1/3. Whenever you manifest dread, the card that you don't put onto the battlefield, you can put into your hand.
Yeah, you hate to see. I mean, I think it's Ghost Vacuum is... not in consideration here for me. I would be choosing between Growing Dread and Analyst, and I think I like taking the Analyst here. It certainly has the higher upside than Growing Dread. And I guess there's like a 5% chance Growing Dread wheels, like if no one else is drafting blue green, but like Analyst is never wheeling. So I like taking Analyst here.
I also like Analyst over Growing Dread here. This also makes the Underwater Tunnel picks look way better from pack one, which is something like that we could have messed up.
Also, I talked about like, oh, he's probably blue green at the end of pack one. He has threats around every corner and Slavering Branch Snapper. Like, those are his green cards. So he also doesn't have to be green. Yes, he did just take a Patchwork Beastie, but he got a pick 10 ticket boost. Like, he has outs to do something else. And the Analyst also leaves him that flexibility.
For sure. All right, moving on to pack two, pick three. You see the following cards as options. There's a Say Its Name, another Brood Spinner. Actually, this is the first Brood Spinner he's seen, excuse me. Moving on to pack two, pick three, there's a Say Its Name, there's a Brood Spinner, the black green 2/3 Surveil 2, and then you can pay 6 mana to make 1/1 flyers equal to your Delirium. And then there's a Painter Studio. The attacking creatures get +1/+0, and you can also reveal the top two and play them until the end of your next turn.
I think Brood Spinner makes the most sense here. Plays really well with all of his Surveil. He's already got Keys of the House to splash, threats around every corner to splash, all of that. Manifesting and Surveilling is going to play well with Brood Spinner, cracking to make 6, of course. Insects, I like the Spinner.
Yeah, and once you get Brood Spinner here, this is where you're, like you were saying, you're kind of flexible. You're just blue, even though you picked up the Patchwork Beastie. Once I get Brood Spinner here, I'm locking in Sultai something.
Yeah, I mean, it's still probably blue-green splash at the moment because threats around every corner enables a splash, whereas like going blue-black splash-green makes less sense.
Right, and Silent Hall Creeper really wants to come down on turn two, that sort of thing, yeah.
Correct. But yeah, but to your point when we talked about our lists earlier in the week, like, or Brood Spinner is kind of a better splash in that sense because like it's impactful late game too because it's a win con.
Correct, yeah. JED agrees, grabs the Brood Spinner. Moving on to pack two, pick four. Picks up a Wickerfolk Thresher over essentially nothing. That's the 3 and a green 5/4 artifact creature. When you have Delirium and it attacks, you get to reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land, you put it on the battlefield tapped. Otherwise, you put it in your hand. Pick five. There's some options here, but this is kind of an interesting pick. There's a Branch Snapper. We've seen a lot of Branch Snappers. 7/6 Trample. There's a Smoky Lounge, the room build around for blue-red. Come Back Wrong as the rare, 2 and a black for a sorcery, destroy target creature, and then you put it into play on your side of the battlefield and then sacrifice at the beginning of your next end step. And there's also a Final Vengeance, black for the sorcery, exile something, and you have to sacrifice a creature and enchantment as part of the casting cost.
This was interesting to me just because, so JD selected Come Back Wrong, and Paul Chian on coverage seemed to think, Paul who has been mythic number one, vying for it with 2 Duck Cubed over the weekend, which is kind of incredible that Paul's been like covering worlds and then in his off time getting Mythic 1 back. Just pretty impressive stuff. He seemed to think this pick wasn't close, that Come Back Wrong was like definitely the pick. They didn't seem to be talking about Final Vengeance. I think in the moment I would have taken Final Vengeance. Like, I've gotten some upside with Come Back Wrong of like you get an ETB or something. He's got plenty of rooms to sacrifice, and I think Final Vengeance is such a good splash with what he's got going on.
I agree. I like Final Vengeance here as well. The Exile versus Destroy, I think, is more upside than the Destroy and potentially nabbing an ETB.
Yeah, it's right. I feel like Come Back Wrong is closer to Sorcery Speed Murder than it is to, like, yes, you do sometimes get some upside, but not that often, whereas I agree with you, like, the setup cost for Final Vengeance is not that high currently for JED, and I just think it's what you said, exile is so important.
Well, and also 1 mana versus 3 mana.
Yes.
Like that's the biggest part of Final Vengeance. It's exile plus 1 mana. The tempo swings from Final Vengeance are huge.
But one of the things I was thinking was like, well, I don't know if I want to load up on them because of that. Like, yeah, he's got some fodder, but he doesn't have a ton of fodder. It's not like in red black where you'd play as many copies as you can get. And then pick six, he gets his choice between Underwater Tunnel, what, number 3, or his first Final Vengeance, and he decides to take it here.
Yeah, and the rest of the pack rounds out with nothing particularly exciting. Pick 7, you get a blue red land. Pick 8, you get a greenhouse rickety gazebo, which I mean, needs some fixing. He's going to play three colors here. The only fixing we currently have is threats around every corner that is helpful for casting our cards.
And I know you would never put it in a deck, but he does have Keys to the House, which is fixing as well.
You're right. It's not in consideration for me. It's probably gonna end up making the final deck. Yeah.
And much like Simon's draft, pack three is where it really kind of comes together.
Yeah. Pack three, pick one, you open Balustrade Worm, which is the 5/5 hasting trample. And if you have a Delirium, you can cast it out of your graveyard, along with a bunch of other stuff you'd be interested in. There's a Spineseeker Centipede that's like kind of awkwardly close. I mean, not really. You have to take the Balustrade Worm, but
yeah.
This deck wants as many copies of Spineseeker Centipede or even the Rim that searches up a basic, like, to be honest. Either one of those would be great in this deck. But you got to take the Balustrade Worm there. Pick two gets an Oblivious Bookworm. Pick three picks up some much-needed interaction in Monstrous Emergence. All right, and then pick four, we're going to dive into this one quickly. So cards you see are Cryptid Inspector. That's the 2/3 Vigilance. And whenever something's flipped up face up, it gets a +1/+1 counter put on it. There's a green-white land, which doesn't do anything for you, unfortunately. If this were an on-color duel, you'd be snapping it up here. As well as a Gremlin Tamer in the pack, the 2/2 Eerie that poops out 1/1s, and Scrabbling Skullcrab, blue for the 0/3 Eerie. Target player mills two cards.
Are you not... What happened? You were Mr. Cryptid Inspector for weeks.
I mean, I love a Cryptid Inspector. I like a Cryptid Inspector.
The thing that is interesting about... And I think we'll see this play out... Yeah, pick eight of this pack... is that he actually doesn't have that much manifest, right? He has threats and two underwater tunnels.
Yeah, that's it. And that's it.
And to go with the paranormal analyst that cares about it, the threats around every corner that cares about it, and the Oblivious Bookworm that he just picked up that cares about it. So Cryptid Inspector is not going to be at its best here. I was just sort of like, he took Scrabbling Skull Crab here. I'm not a crab believer. And I just like...
Clearly from your hatred of it in the stream of mine that you watched a week ago.
I just don't think it's that good. And like, yeah, he has the two underwater tunnels, like rooms make it work. I don't know. Just wow. People milling. Is he self-milling? What is he doing with this?
He's defensive speed, baby. Defensive speed.
It's an 0/3. That's not defensive speed.
You're such a hater.
I am such a hater. So pick five, he grabs a Wary Watchdog over a blue-black dual land. But I think sort of to your point of like he needs everything, he kind of still needs like both fixing and two drops.
It's tough. The mana situation is tough here for sure. It's hard to say without being in the seat and you don't really have a mental list in your head of all the stuff. No way to say what's right or wrong here. I don't think like to armchair quarterback that pick and then grabs a Glimmer Burst, the blue green land, picks up another underwater tunnel over a paranormal analyst, which is where like Marshall and Paul were like, oh, sick. You get a paranormal analyst, but he doesn't have the manifest dread. And the underwater tunnel then juices up the other payoffs he has in the first paranormal analyst and the threats around every corner, while also then being something to sacrifice to Final Vengeance, potentially. I think you gotta take your vegetables with the underwater tunnel, Slimy Aquarium here. But all told, like the deck ends up pretty clunky with some rough mana requirements.
This interesting take. And he also does get some pickups on the wheel. He gets a Flesh Burrower, pick nine, the 2/2 Death Touch, and Twist Reality, the counter or manifest, which both make his deck. And we're looking at his deck pick here. See, I don't hate his deck. Like, I'm kind of surprised that he 0/3'd.
I'm pretty sure that's what happened because I saw the standings round 10 and he was 7/3. That's what happened.
Yeah, no, right? he went 7-0 and then didn't make top 8. No, he's not. He did 0/3. I'm not saying I'm surprised that that is what we're saying. I'm surprised it happened. Like, and I only watched round 1 where he got cheesed out by a Kaito in game 2 and 3 that he couldn't answer. But like, this is not a bad looking deck, especially for in pod play on day 2. Like, he's got powerful cards. He's got the Worm. He's got Brood Spinner. He's got Oblivious Bookworm, Paranormal Analyst. He's got card selection. He has some interaction with Final Vengeance, Monstrous Emergence, and Comeback Wrong. Like, he's checking the boxes. I agree with you. The mana is not great. That is perhaps my biggest issue. But he's got two land cyclers as well, plus like, keys, plus
land,
threats.
Land cycling is so terrible. And then you've only got 16 basics in what looks to be a very mana-hungry deck here. I, like, I almost want to run 18 lands here, like this deck, more than I want to run 16.
Or 17 plus keys. But like triple underwater tunnel does do something there.
But you've only got 8 blue sources. Like, you don't know. You've got
only 7
untapped
blue sources, too.
Yeah. I agree. Looking at the deck, I think for how I was feeling during the draft, this is a good looking deck for how I was feeling during the draft, which was like, oh, this isn't going great. But like, what else could you have done?
Yeah, I guess I got to go back and watch what happened in round 2 or round 3. They may not show round 3 or whatever, but got to go back and see what happened, because I would imagine that the matches are close. Like, his deck is, this is a good deck. I like, because my other question to you in reviewing this draft, you know, we were like all hot and bothered about Simon's draft of like how awesome it was that he 3-0'd. And I honestly thought that could have been possible here. Do you feel like even if you had taken Twitching Doll over Hall Creeper, I guess you are taking Disturbing Mirth fourth, which will set you on a fairly different path, does it? Like, could JED have, like, full hindsight 2020 armchair quarterback, could JED have done something different and better here?
Yes, full armchair quarterback. If you take Twitching Doll into Disturbing Mirth, I think you end up in base
green-black
Jund splashing Disturbing Mirth with a better curve and better interaction, and you can play both those Final Vengeances happily. Or I guess you still have comeback.
The Hall Creeper just kind of messes him up.
Yes, the mana's much better with the Twitching Doll, but again, that's hindsight being 20/20 there for that pick.
Yeah,
That's a really close pick
for sure.
To me, that's why as I was watching the draft live, you draft along with them, right? I picked the Doll there for the reasons I said, was that I think it's a safer pick when you don't know what's going to happen. And Hall Creeper is the higher upside pick. And I think you got whammied here by the downside of Hall Creeper, the way the draft went.
Yeah, I think it's easy to look at, okay, I got Hall Creeper, and then you get that Oblivious Bookworm passed to you, and you're like, great, I'm doing it. But other than that, his blue is not good. Oh, and I guess the Analyst, too, also feels like hashtag doing it. But he doesn't really get there on the Manifest life.
But Bookworm's also not great in this list. Like, this list looks like a lot of good cards, like, to me.
This is a classic Ethan week one blue green I can't win with this deck draft, and I send it to you and you're like, yeah, why is Keys to the House in your draft deck?
it's not the Keys to the House. I think so. If you look at the cards in this list, Bookworm good, Brood Spinner good, Hall Creeper good, Paranormal Analyst pretty good if you've got the Manifest Dreaded Supporter, Balustrade Worm good, Threats good. Past those, like,
yeah,
6 cards,
yeah,
the quality drops off a lot. And then also, like, the deck is getting pulled in many different directions. Like, you've got some Delirium stuff going on with Patchwork Beastie, but not really. You have a lot of Manifest Dread payoffs, but you have no good Manifest Dread cards. Like, Slimy Aquarium, like, doing that on turn 4 to trigger your Manifest Dread is not where you want to be. So Bookworm, while being a great card, I don't think it's certainly at its best in this list. The mana is tough. Like, 16 lands is tough. Like, there's a lot that could go wrong with this deck, despite, like, looking at it and think, yeah, that looks like a good deck. And again, I don't know that there was tons you could do differently in the draft.
Yeah.
If you don't start it with Twitching Doll, I think you end up here, and I think JD did a good job drafting, but it's a tough seat.
For sure. Really interesting. Both of these, so interesting drafts, like, such interesting drafts. I feel like sometimes you can get super on rails ones, sometimes you can get ones where we're like, I mean, this one we, I guess, had some disagreements with, but I really liked both of these drafts as teaching tools.
Well, I mean, but not big disagreements once you get past the first 4 picks. Like, I'm largely with,
yeah,
JD once you get past the first 4 picks, and then it's impossible to know how it would have been different.
Yeah, if the packs break,
the Twitching Doll,
sure. Sure, sure,
or
sure.
Packs break differently or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
Shocking that a great draft format and high-level players leads to good content.
I would never have guessed it. All right, that's going to do it here for us. We'll be short and sweet on the sign-off. Thanks so much for hanging out, and we'll catch you next time for another episode of Lords Unlimited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.